Is there a name from your past that causes your stomach to churn? Someone who hurt you deeply, and just hearing that name makes your jaw tighten a little? Maybe a coach who would not play your kid fairly, maybe a teacher who mocked you in school, maybe a friend who betrayed you, a criminal who victimized your parents, a father who abandoned you early on, a family friend who sexually abused you. When you hear their name mentioned, you can feel a little burn inside you start up again. And you just want to hurt them for what they did, retaliate, hit back, take revenge. That's natural, that's normal, and that's bad. Jesus said, forgive those who hurt you. And my hope is that right here today, before we leave, you would choose to forgive the person who so far has ruined your life. And if you say, no way, sorry, I will never forgive them for what they did, then all I can say is, then your life is going to suck. I heard a guy say he rents lots of cars. He rents many cars in his life, and he often forgets to release the emergency brake when he takes off. He said he once drove about 10 miles before he noticed he hadn't lowered the lever. He said, that doesn't say much for me, but it doesn't speak well of the emergency brake either. He said, actually, they shouldn't call it an emergency brake. They should call it an emergency make the car smell funny lever. Part of today's sermon is you really shouldn't call an unwillingness to forgive a grudge. You should call it a make your life stink decision. Joseph had the perfect reason to seek revenge and the perfect opportunity to take it, but he chose to do something completely off script, and it is worthy our consideration. You remember where we are in the story. Joseph's dad loved Joseph the most. His stepbrothers did not love him. As a teenager, God gave Joseph dreams of his brothers bowing down to him, and his brothers did not like that. So one day, they beat him up, and they stripped him clean, and they threw him down, and they sold him off. And then they told the father that Joseph had been killed by wild animals, which was almost true. Now it's 20 years later. And through a series of tremendously lucky circumstances, Joseph now lives in the richest nation in the world, and he's in charge. Genesis 41 says, and all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe everywhere. With God's help, Joseph is now running a worldwide food distribution program, and since there's a famine going on all around the world, that makes Joseph a pretty important guy. Enter his brothers, stage north. Genesis 42 says, now Joseph was governor of the land, the person who sold the grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. Didn't we hear that that was going to happen somewhere? The Bible says, then Joseph recognized them. I'm thinking Joseph has probably been expecting them to show up at some point. Obviously, they did not expect to see him. Even if Joseph was still alive, he's not going to be the vice president of Egypt. And it's been 20 years. And this guy in front of them speaks Egyptian, and he's clean shaven, and he's wearing a fancy Egyptian robe. And the last time they saw Joseph, he was a scrawny, naked 17-year-old kid begging them for his life. It's been 20 years. Bodies change in 20 years. I've heard there are three stages in life: youth, middle age, and you're looking good. Joseph is 20 years older and bigger and stronger, and his brothers don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And what a chance to hit back. He could deny them food. He could say, no food for you, and send them home to their father empty-handed, like they had gone to their father before. Or he could grab them. He could rip off their coats. He could put them in prison. He could sell them to Midianite traders. That would be fair. There was an endless opportunity hung right in front of Joseph as his brothers cowered there on the ground in front of him. It was kind of like in The Mummy. Did you ever see The Mummy? When Evie tells the bad guy, she says, you know, nasty little fellows such as yourself always get their comeuppance. And the bad guy said, always? And Evie said, always. Vengeance, karma, justice, comeuppance, whatever you call it, we like it when bad guys get it in the end, when they get what they deserve. Billy Jack, Walking Tall, Equalizer 1, 2, or 3, Silverado, John Wick, any Liam Neeson film. Something's viscerally satisfying in movies when the bad guys pay at the end for the wrong that they've done. And in life, too. We like when bad people have to pay. We probably never pull out a gun and start shooting, but we can retaliate in other ways. When we are treated badly, we can retaliate legally. I'll sue you for everything you've got. You don't treat me that way. There's financial retaliation. J. Paul Getty changed his will 21 times because family members kept ticking him off. We have verbal retaliation. We start young in training people to strike back with their words, to hit people with their words, to hurt people back with their words. There was an 8-year-old boy fighting with his two sisters one day, and the mother made the 8-year-old go stand in the corner for 20 minutes and then called him to supper. And when he sat down, the dad said, "Now, Jimmy, I know you don't want to, but tonight it's your turn to pray." And Jimmy looked at his sister sitting across the table from him, and they stuck out their tongues at him. So the 8-year-old bowed his head and he said, "God, thank you for preparing this table for me in the presence of mine enemies." We are sarcastic. We are taught to be sarcastic. We recruit other people to take our side. In a fight, we try to get more people to be mad against that person with us. Or sometimes we give people the cold shoulder. They treat us badly. We're mature Christians. We would never resort to violence. So it's nothing overt. It's not loud. It's not easily seen. But there's a noticeable chill. And the other person says, "Is something wrong?" And we say, "No, nothing." While inwardly we're seething, and we think, "Take that, you creep, serves you right." Sadly, this happens in marriage a lot, because there are so many opportunities to be hurt when you're married. I heard of a wife who vowed she would dance on her husband's grave, so he went out and prearranged to be buried at sea. It is in our DNA to not want to let people get away with stuff when they hurt us, and they will hurt us. They will hurt you. Albert Einstein said, "There are two things that are infinite, the universe and human stupidity." And I'm not sure about the universe. I don't know who did it. I don't know how you got so hurt that you are still burning on the inside against them. Maybe at some point a boss cheated you out of commissions that were due. Maybe a doctor was negligent in your care. Maybe a partner swindled you out of a business. Maybe your children neglect you. Maybe a coworker slandered you and forever soiled your reputation for no purpose. Maybe a spouse left you and is now poisoning the minds of your children against you. Maybe your brothers beat you and stripped you and mocked you and sold you into slavery and hoped you died. It's happened before. But Joseph chose not to retaliate, not to seek revenge. Instead, he forgave his brothers. And that's not normal. And that's not easy, but it is right, and it works the best. And next week, when we have more time and more people, we will cover all of the fascinating events that made that happen, how he got to where he is, and what they were doing. But today, I just want to encourage you to think about choosing to forgive as the default in your life. Your life will be better if you learn the secret of forgiveness, and you do have to learn it. You have to learn it by practicing it. And it is a secret because most people don't even know they're supposed to aim for it, much less do it. But if right here, right now, today, you will commit yourself to forgive the person who's hurt you the most in life, you will get to experience some good that God's got in store for you in your life that otherwise you won't. And if you say, "No way, no how, no, Walker, I will never, ever, never forgive them for what they did," then I will read Hebrews 12 to you and say, "Make every effort to live in peace with everyone and to be holy. Without holiness, no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many." See, choosing not to forgive engenders bitterness inside you that ultimately hurts you the most. When you won't forgive someone, You're still being controlled by what they did to you. And if you carry bitterness around, if you won't let it go, that person is still dominating your life. And while you're mulling your offense over in your mind time after time after time after time, the evil that was done to you is still poisoning you. And you can say, well, yeah, but I'm plotting my revenge. I'll stop thinking about it once I get even. Then I'll be satisfied. But that lie is from the pit of hell. You cannot get even. How could you? Even if you killed the person, you wouldn't feel satisfaction. Revenge is a lie. There is no such thing. Life doesn't work like that. Number one point today, choosing to forgive those who hurt you is good for you. Do you know Amos and Andy? You know the Amos and Andy characters from long ago and far away? One day, Andy had a big lump under his jacket, and Amos said, hey, what's up with that? And Andy said, oh boy, this is a good one. He said, you know that guy at work that always comes up and slaps my back? And Amos goes, yeah, I know him. Andy goes, you know how it always hurts me, and I don't like that, and I told him to stop? Amos said, right, but he keeps on doing it. And Andy said, right, but not anymore, because today I am wearing TNT under my coat. And when he comes up and slaps me today, boy, is he going to be sorry. Folks, if you carry a grudge against anyone, it will backfire, and your bitterness will end up costing you. Joseph had every right and a really good opportunity to crush his brothers that had hurt him so deeply, but he chose instead to forgive them. He could have hit them. He could have made them suffer, but he didn't. He released them. He reconciled with them. He had his father brought down to Egypt eventually. And here's the key. Forgiveness is when you voluntarily give up your right to hit back. Sometimes people think forgiveness means pretending that nothing bad really happened, to which we say, wrong, wrong, 1,000 times wrong. If nothing bad happened, you don't need to forgive. The only time forgiveness comes into play is when somebody has done something vile to you. To forgive someone starts by saying, what you did to me sucked. You deserve to die. It's not like saying nothing happened. And some people think to forgive someone means that what they did wasn't too bad. Wrong, bad, dumb, no. What Joseph's brothers did to him was awful, and it should be punished. If your spouse breaks their vow, to forgive does not mean to say, well, that's okay, feel free to do it again. Quite contrary, to forgive someone is to deem what they did disgusting, subhuman, despicable. You only have to forgive when it's really bad. But then you say that you are willingly choosing to give up your right to kill them from now on. Forgiveness is to say, you violated me badly, but I'm going to refuse to hold that against you. And every time that thought crosses my mind and the opportunity to strike you down comes up, I'm not going to do it. Forgiveness is a choice you make in your heart to choke off all desire to hurt the person who hurt you. And you say, well, Walker, if I do that, won't the person be getting away with it? And I say, yes, yes, exactly. That is precisely what forgiveness is. You eating the hurt, you allowing the other person to walk away without being fired upon. Exactly, yes. It's turning off the tape every time that hurt comes into your mind. To not seek revenge, to not attempt murder. Rather, to seek a restored friendship. Forgiveness means we're looking ahead to something maybe good. It's what Jesus told us to do. In Mark 11, Jesus said, and when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them, so that your Father in heaven may forgive you your sins. You're right. You're right. Those people, they don't deserve it. You're right. They should pay for what they did. You're right. It feels like you should slug them multiple times for what they've done. But if you'll choose to forgive, and if you'll say it out loud, if you say, I will not let bitterness continue in my heart. If you'll say, I will not, even though I have good reason, even though I have the right, I will not hit you in any way from now on. If you'll say, I relinquish my right now to hate you. You can stop that tape from playing in your head. And if you don't, the person who hurt you will keep hurting you forever. I know a man who was slandered by another man in his congregation. Somebody said something terrible about the guy, and nobody checked the story. The whole church just believed it. The whole church was ostracized from this guy because of what was said about him. He was forced out of teaching, eventually out of leadership, out of the whole church. He was devastated. His friends in the congregation abandoned him. He left the church. And 15 years later, he still brought that story up every time I had a conversation with him. Every time, what that man had done to him. And as he was telling the story, every time, tears would come to this man's eyes. He was still so hurt. 15 years later, it was that close to the surface. And the man, the guy who had done it to him, the guy who had badmouthed him, he had died a couple years after it happened. But the offended man couldn't let it go. I tried to explain to him how he was allowing the bad action of a dead man to still control his life. But he wouldn't give up his right to hate what the guy had done to him, dead or alive. So if you're taking notes, this is number one. Forgiveness is good for you. Forgiveness frees you from the evil that was done to you. Some people don't want to try to forgive because they're afraid that it might actually work. They're afraid that they will lose the thing inside them that says you deserve vengeance. And they're right, because once you stop feeding a grudge, once you choose to stop feeding a grudge, it will slowly fade away. Forgiveness is a process. It takes time, it takes practice, it takes repeated attempts, but eventually, with God's help and your effort, you can live free again. Choosing to listen to Jesus and forgiving those who hurt you is good for you. Number two, choosing to forgive those who hurt you is good for them. And I know that's the last thing in the world you care about when somebody really does you wrong. But this is what it means to live in Jesus' kingdom. We do things differently. We do life differently. We do things that are good for other people. We don't just think of ourselves every time. So the reason that that person did that heinous thing to you, you know why they did that to you? Because they're messed. If they weren't messed up on the inside, if they were healthy, they wouldn't have done that to you, right? And you hurting them back like they hurt you is not going to fix them. It will just lead to much more damage. The only way somebody who's messed ever gets better is when someone else shows them kindness. People never change when they do wrong and others do bad right back at them. They never get better after that. But sometimes, not always, sometimes when people who do wrong are shown kindness, they change. So does that mean we never defend ourselves? When we're being mugged, should we just let it happen? Does that mean we don't press charges against rapists and traffickers? Does that mean we don't attempt to militarily dismantle terrorist organizations? Of course we do all those things. God set up systems of behavior control in our broken world to protect innocent people from evil. And if a killer of several people has to face a death sentence, it might help him see his evil in life and turn to God. But if you take someone to court and you enjoy it and you try to squash them in retaliation, that's not good. Forgiveness means we do whatever consequences come from the wrong behavior with no malice. We allow the consequences to happen, but we don't try to hurt the person in the process. Forgiveness can include consequences for wrong behavior, but not the evil behind it, not the evil intent in our parts. And forgiveness doesn't mean trust either. It doesn't equal trust. Forgive and forget, have you heard that? That applies to the desire to hurt back. You should forgive and forget the desire to hurt back. But that has nothing to do with trust. Forgiveness is something granted by the forgiver. Trust has to be earned by the forgiven. If a pedophile abuses someone in your family, and you choose to forgive them, that's good. But you are not to write a glowing daycare reference for the person. If your fiancé sleeps with someone else, you should forgive that person, but you might want to reconsider getting married. When trust is lost, forgiveness doesn't reinstate it. Trust comes after credibility is proven. And credibility can be proven. It can be earned through a willingness to do whatever it costs to earn it back, however long that takes. Joseph forgave his brothers, but then he put them through a series of tests to see if they changed. And when we look at all that next week, we'll see the rebuilding trust that takes time. Forgiveness is one person's choice. Trust and reconciliation is a two-way street. So you can choose to forgive today. In an instant, you can choose to forgive the person that hurt you. Trust with that person is established over time. But it's cool. When you forgive people, it can have a huge impact in their lives. When you forgive someone, it can change them. Mark Kitts studied at the Cincinnati Bible Seminary in the 90s, some years after I was there, some years before Eric was there. Mark Kitts, his adoptive parents, Gene and Linda Kitts, were ministers with a Kentucky church. So Mark grew up as a preacher's kid. But he was adopted, and he knew it. His whole life, he knew it. In his 20s, Mark decided he would like to meet his birth mother. So he did some research, and he found out that he had been born in Anderson County, Kentucky. And it turns out that his mother, at age 15, had fallen in love with an athlete in the school, and she'd gotten pregnant, and her family had insisted that she have the baby out of town, to do that all in secret, to go do that somewhere and give up the baby to adoption so that it would save their family from shame. And that's what the 15-year-old girl did. Her high school boyfriend, when he found out that that girl was pregnant and that she had gone away, he was devastated and he went out and joined the army. 28 years later, a social worker asked Mark's birth mother if she would like to meet her son. He was looking for her. And she was reluctant to do that, but when she found out that he had become a preacher, she agreed that she would meet with him. And it was awkward for her. She had been divorced 2 times in her life. But Mark, the preacher, was not judgmental. He didn't blame her. He didn't ask her for an explanation of how she could have abandoned him as a baby. He'd come with a purpose to meet her. He just wanted to thank her for not aborting his life. Mark just wanted to thank his birth mother for giving him the privilege of being alive. Because he had grown up. He had wonderful adoptive parents. He'd grown up in a Christian home. He knew the Lord. And the mother and child reunion ended up being a beautiful moment. During the conversation, Mark's birth mother slipped and she swore at one point. And she said, I'm swearing in front of a minister. And he laughed. He said, that's okay, I've sworn some myself. And she said, really? He said, yeah, once or twice. But his forgiveness of her made possible a relationship that they had never had before. Later, his birth father finally agreed to meet Mark also. And again, instead of lashing out against the past, there was a spirit of forgiveness on Mark's part when they got together, and it bonded them, father and son. True story. Mark's birth mother then met Mark's birth father again after 28 years of not seeing each other, and they got married. And Mark performed the wedding ceremony of his parents. Remarkable story of a young man who gave up his right to retaliate, who ate the hurt himself, so that there could be a chance for reconciliation. And in this case, there was reconciliation a lot. So much so they turned it into a movie. It's called Our Son the Matchmaker. You can buy it on Amazon. Number one, forgiveness is good for you. Number two, forgiveness is good for the person being forgiven. Number three, forgiveness is Jesus' plan for fixing a broken world. Forgiveness is good for the world. I mean, right? This is at the heart of his plan. Forgiveness is the crux of the matter. There was a movie in the 1980s called War Games. The tagline is, "Want to play a game?" It's a movie that popularized computer hacking, information technology, and cyber security, none of which were really popular at the time. The story is about a teen who, in an attempt to change his school grades on the computer, tapped into the United States military computer, and he started playing a game with it, thinking that he was playing with other hackers or something, and he accidentally triggered World War III. The computer, thinking that whole thing was real, initiated missile launch codes that were going to blow up most of our planet. And the story is the kid racing against time to convince the NORAD computer to stop what it's doing. And at the end of the movie, I was going to say spoiler alert, but this movie's been out for 40 years. So if you haven't seen it, it's kind of on you, not me. At the end of the movie, the kid challenges the computer to envision every possible outcome of the war it's starting. And the computer uses its mega brain to scan every scenario. And finally, just in the nick of time, it finishes all its scanning. And then the computer says, "Interesting game, thermonuclear war. The only way to win is not to play." And the computer turns off all the rockets and goes back to sleep. The only way to win is not to play? That would be true of another game people play called revenge. We are so tempted to think we can get even with the people who hurt us. When someone hurts you, getting even isn't the same as getting better. But Jesus says there is a way to a better world, and he went that way, and he says we can too. Cassandra Tiersma wrote a genius piece for Guideposts recently. She says, no matter where she looks online, at the end of everything that she reads, she's always being asked to like, share, or follow. And Ms. Tiersma says, every time she gets invited to do that online, to do something like that on someone's social media site, her mind flips over to her deal with Jesus, who asks us to like him more than anyone or anything else in the world, because he likes us more than life itself, and he proved that. And Jesus, who invites us to share what he's given us with everyone, every person, all of them, including the ones who hurt us, to share what he's given us with those we interact with. And in doing so, she says, to follow him, to follow his example, to follow the way he goes, to walk in his steps, including the large deal of forgiveness. Like, share, follow, for real, every day, all day long, from here on out. So will ya? We've come to a point of decision right now. Hear something in a sermon and do it? Is that possible? Just because Jesus says it works best? Whoever the person is who did it to you, whoever came to mind immediately when I first asked, who's the person you're never going to forgive? For your sake, will you choose to forgive that person starting today? For their sake, will you, like Jesus, say, okay, I voluntarily, deliberately forego my right to kill you back. For Jesus' sake, will you say, Jesus, I trust that you know what you're talking about, so even though it feels totally wrong to give up my claims on revenge, I promise now to stop playing the tapes in my head of what happened to me in the past. And I will work for a chance to rebuild a really good relationship with that person somehow down the road. This all takes ongoing practice to do it well, but it starts with a decision, and you can make that decision or you cannot make that decision right now. Lots of people believe in Jesus, but he said his disciples are the people who actually believe him. And he said forgiving is the characteristic that leads to the healthiest relationships in life. So the question is, do you believe him? Will you choose to forgive today? Starting now? Let's pray.